Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 321, and we are in Numbers chapter 3 and verse 27. Now we're going to continue with the responsibilities of the different families of Aaron and the Levites. They each had their own responsibility there around the temple, around the tabernacle, and all those things they were doing in accordance with the commandments of God. None of them, it was not Moses or Aaron or anybody else, decided on their own. They did not sit down and have a committee, you know, as the manner of many is. And then, you know, decided, well, you're going to do this, we're going to do that. When it came to the tabernacle, when it came to the instructions that God gave them, they basically had to follow it. He spoke, they did it. And things were very simple. Unfortunately, when we departed from God, and now we do not have a direct contact and link with God, and now we sit down and do our own thing in many ways. And hopefully, some of it is pleasing to the sight of God, but obviously, we should realize that certainly, you know, many things that we do may not be pleasing to the sight of God, and therefore we should seek the will of God by studying His Word day and night, by drawing closer to Him, by developing this relationship with Him until we get to the point where we function just like we read here. So we can do the things as commanded by Moses or as commanded by his servants, the prophets, if they left us an example, you see, or as commanded later on by Jesus Christ himself who came in the flesh and gave us instructions and his disciples. A lot of people just don't function that way in most organizations where they call themselves, you know, the people of God. They do their own thing in many ways and, you know, they pray over it, yes, but oftentimes we'll enter our own understanding and do our own things. And so, the input is human, and the results are human. And so, in verse 27, we read of another family, and of Kohath, who was the family of the Amramites. And Amramites were basically the family of Moses. The father of Moses was Amram. And the family of the Israelites, and the family of the Hebronites, and the family of the Uzziites. And Uzziel in Hebrew, you know, when you change it to English, you come up with totally different names. It's very unfortunate why people cannot just stick to the name that they read here. They have to change it. And these are the families of the Kohathite, according to the number of all the males from the month old upward, 8,600 keepers of the charge of the sanctuary. You're talking about an awful lot of people there. All these families, including the family of Aaron. An awful lot of people, an awful lot of work that they had to do in the tabernacle, because you're talking about not only the daily sacrifices, but also all the offerings and the sacrifices of the children of Israel. And so we read in verse 29, the families of the sons of Kohath were to pitch on the side of the tabernacle southward, the prince of the fathers house of the families of the Kohathite being Elitzaphan, the son of Uzziel, and their charge the ark, and the table, and the candlestick, and the altars, and the vessels of the sanctuary, wherewith the priest minister, and the screen, and all that pertains to the service thereof. Now all these things needed to be carried, needed to be cleaned, needed to be purged, you know, now and then, and purified from blood and all kind of sins and things like that. And then needed to put together, you know, when you carry them from one place to another and put them back where they should be in order. And obviously when it came to the temple, things changed because now you had a permanent structure, first in Shiloh. And so the part of moving and installing or putting things where they should be, well, that was no more. But on the other hand, you had the service that was in it. And then obviously there was also a change when they entered into the land. They no longer needed to all the families to be all around the tabernacle as they were here. And still there were many all around, you see, but not in this configuration because by now they were divided among all the tribes of Israel. And you know, obviously there were modifications. But the reality is those who were in the temple, in the tabernacle, those who were serving in terms of courses, as David later on divided them when it came to the temple, he prepared all this new arrangement, obviously by inspiration of God. He didn't do it on his own. Every detail that went into it was by inspiration of God, by direct communication from God, as He made it very plain. And so, from that point on, for generations to come, all this information was there to be known, passed on from generation to generation, and the people of Israel already aware of that, reading it every Sabbath. Everybody knew what was going on, you see. And the congregation of Israel, Adat Israel, the body of witnesses of Israel, they all knew exactly what was the will of God in all these matters, and the responsibilities of the priests and the Levites. So Israel was not in darkness. It was not sort of a mystical religion or religion of mysticism, where, you know, as they called them later on, the cult of the priests, you know, they knew the secrets and mysteries, and all the rest were in ignorance and blindness, something that you find in most religions on the face of the earth. Well, this was not the case. God wanted all of Israel to be fully illuminated and aware of all these details. And the mere fact that He caused them to be recorded made it possible for them, as they were commanded to read it, to be fully aware of all these matters. So God was not the God of darkness and of ignorance, but God is a God of knowledge and of light, and then He wanted His people, obviously, to know all these things, to be a part of it, to have an appreciation for it. And so when you read all these instructions, you learn all these facts, and you realize what kind of life Israel had. Since they were a body of witnesses, they had to be witnesses to all these matters. And they saw certain families of the Levites, of the priests, not functioning in accordance with these instructions, obviously. They could tell them something about it. And verse 32, we read, and Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, being prince of the princes of the Levites, in other words, he was the chief of staff, so to speak, and later on he became the high priest. So all the Levites had princes, in other words, rulers over them, and he was in charge of all of them. That's why he's called the prince of princes of the Levites. And having, in Hebrew, the word prince is president. That's the word that he used today for president, Nasi. And here they call it in English, princes. I guess at the time, when they translated that, you know, they didn't have this concept of president. You see, that was in English, in monarchy. So obviously they used princes instead of presidents. Basically, Nasi means exalted one, uplifted one, you see. You know, you exalt someone to a position, and so you basically call them exalted one, Nasi, and that's all it means. So really the word prince does not convey that. And certainly not the prince of princes. He's the one exalted above all those who were exalted, and that's basically what it means. And in Israel today, they use that for the president, because he's the exalted one above all, and obviously in this country it's the same. You have governors, and you have mayors, and you have one that is above all of them, and he's the most exalted one, so he's called also in Hebrew, Nasi. And so in verse 33 we read, of Merari was the family of the Mahlites and the family of the Mushites. These are the families of Merari. And those that were numbered of them according to the number of all the males from a month old and upward were 6,200. The princes, that is the prince of the father's house of the families of Merari, being Zuriel in English. It's Zuriel, which means God is my rock, the Tzur. You see, Tzur does not mean rock. Tzur means rock. And again, another change here in the language, and unfortunately, as a rule of thumb, either because of the language or because, you know, people just did not choose to exactly follow what the Bible says. You know, they began to change names, and they came up with totally different names that really lost the meaning in the process, which is very unfortunate. And we read here, they were to pitch on the side of the tabernacle northward, the appointed charge of the sons of Merari, being the boards of the tabernacle, and the bars thereof, and the pillars thereof, and the sockets thereof, and all the instruments thereof, and all that pertains to the service thereof, and the pillars of the court round about. So they were the ones that had to take, you know, the outside of the tabernacle, take it apart, put it back together, maintain it, take care of it, clean it, do all these things. Each one had a responsibility. Again, God is not the author of confusion. He's the God of order. And through these functions of the priesthood, you could see it, and Israel had to learn from it likewise, that everything that you do in Israel, you must do it in order, in accordance with the nature and the mind of the God of Israel. Well, that makes a nation that was, in essence, to a degree, barbarian, you see, in the sense that they were all slaves, and they did not function in harmony, in unity. They did not function in such a manner as God is teaching them here, which in essence teaches them the nature of God Himself and makes it possible for them to become holy as He is holy. And a part of the holiness of God is that He is the God of order and not the God of confusion, you see. And it is to be in a state of confusion and uncleanness and unsanctified, obviously, would make you unholy. And so when God says, be you holy as I am holy, well, He gives them an awful lot of instructions to show them how to be holy. And His instructions and His word is what makes us holy, is what sanctifies us. And that's what Jesus Christ said, sanctify them through your word. And people who do not study the word, people who have been taught that the word of God, in terms of the law of God, the teachings, the instructions of God are done away with, it's not for us, we just live by faith. Obviously, there is no way whatsoever in eternity that they would ever become holy, you see. And that's very unfortunate and tragic for many, and yet they deceive themselves to think that they are sanctified people, holy people. You're not holy just by proclaiming yourself holy, and you know, people have holy places and holy cities and holy this and holy that, and holy assemblies, they call it. You see, if not for the teachings and the instructions of God that make those things holy, they are not holy. And people can pretend all they want. Verse 37. And the reading here about the responsibilities of the family, and then verse 38. And those that were to pitch before the tabernacle eastward, before the tent of meeting, toward the sun rising, were Moses and Aaron and his sons. And so there were four groups, and the fourth group we find Moses and Aaron and his sons, and they were right in front of the tribe of Judah, who was flanked by two other tribes on either side, and they were in the eastern part of the tabernacle. When it came to the land of Israel, Judah was situated, in essence, south of the tabernacle, in terms of the tribe location. Here, in the wilderness, for 40 years, he was on the east side. And it was the east side that generally took off first and went forward. And so Judah was always in the lead and has been there from the beginning of time. And so God already was making it very plain that Judah is going to be the scepter tribe and the leader of Israel, and therefore He positioned him right there in the wilderness in the position of the leader. And so when they entered into the land after Joshua died, when they wanted to continue their conquest, they asked God, who shall go for us first? And He said, Judah. So He was already establishing a fact here, and this was not a coincidence. And so Moses and Aaron and his sons, keeping the charge of the sanctuary, even the charge of the children of Israel, and the common man, that is the Israelites, that drew nigh, was to be put to death. Again, the third warning. Now, by the mouth of two or three witnesses, that's what you read here. So God made it very plain. That's the way I want it. You do not approach the tabernacle. The Levites are all around it. You see, and the priests are there, and then Moses is there, and Aaron is there. And any Israelite who approaches the tabernacle, who enters into the tabernacle at that point, shall be put to death. No, yes, if, and buts. You see? And that was very plain. So again, God made it very plain that the door, at least in the wilderness, the door to the tabernacle was not open for them. You know, there was a veil right in front. Later on, the veil that was not open to them was the veil that was into the court of the, well, it was always that way, the court of the Levites and then the court of the priests, you see. And certainly the Holy of Holies, that was only for the priests once a year. But As for Israel, they could come when the temple was built, and before that the tabernacle, they had a section where Israel could be, but they could never enter into the tabernacle itself. That was exclusive, in other words, nobody could go there, and prohibited to all of Israel. And that again signified the fact that God does not open the door to His sanctuary, you see, to everybody, only to the ones that He chooses and that He calls. And that's why again He says, and many times He's going to repeat it in so many ways, that none can come unto Me, you see, as Christ said, unless the Father calls him. None can come into the tabernacle or the temple unless God calls him. And God called the tribe of Levi to enter into the temple and be there. And then God called the family of the priesthood, you see, to be able to enter into the court of the priest. And the Levites could not enter there because the Levites were not called for that. And God called only the high priest to enter into the Holy of Holies once a year. And so when Jesus Christ died and the veil was opened into the Holy of Holies, it signified that the door now was opened to the Holy of Holies for all people. You see? And who are those people? Anybody? Of course not. Only the ones that God calls. So again, it's still by invitation. And has always been that way and will always be that way for eternity. You see? We will not be able to appear before the Father unless He calls us. It has to be an appointment. You do not, you know, just wander in and out at will, whatever you want. And through the sanctuary, we already see that pattern being established from the beginning of time. In verse 39, we read here, all that were numbered of the Levites, whom Moses and Aaron numbered at the commandment of the Lord, everything is always at the commandment of the Lord, by their families, all the males from a month old and upward, were 22,000. Now, it's a small tribe, not as big as the others. And mind you, we're talking here only about the man from a month old and upward, and generally, it did not mean the older people that, in essence, were out of circulation. Up to age 50, they were in the service. And after that, they were placed in other positions where they taught people, you know, where they did many kind of things. That's the time where they could be judges and all the other responsibilities that the tribe of Levi had. And the tribe of Levi, basically, when you put it all together, a lot of people don't do it, you begin to realize how complex the responsibility was. Even though the main thing that you generally see is their service in the temple or in the tabernacle before that, actually an awful lot of the work that they've done on a daily basis as they were spread throughout all the tribes of Israel was much more complex. They, in essence, were in charge of the total aspect of education that had to do with anything in every area of life. There is no separation here between church and state. There is no civil government and religious government. You see, they were involved in everything. Because the civil government, you know, in terms of the king later on, or the judges, or things like that, all of them were to govern by the law of God. So there is no separation there. And in essence, you found the Levites in every area of life that had to do with the service of the people of God, showing them the way of God in every aspect of life. And so they, in essence, ended up, in modern terms, in the area of the, you might say, you know, they were the department of music, you see, because the music that God wanted Israel to have had to be God-related, you see. He could not develop the kind of music that you have today. When it is God-related, obviously, much of the music that you have today would not even be there. You can see the consequences, you know, everything that we find today, you know, rock music, you know, pop music, and, you know, some of it is okay. But a lot of it, you know, when you listen to the words, you know that it's not godly, you see. And Levites would never compose that kind of music, and they were the only ones that were playing music, generally speaking, in the temple, but also wherever they were, all around the land, in the 48 cities where they were. And so they gave, you know, the guidance and direction, obviously, to the nation of Israel. And when people are to be a holy people, how are they going to be holy unless they listen to the instructions that make them holy? And therefore, the Levites were there to give them those instructions in every area of life. And so when Paul, for example, says that whatever you do, in word or in deed, whatever, anything, you see, do it as unto the Lord. And how would people know how to do it? Well, the Levites were there to teach all these matters. So, when you think about the entertainment, the kind of entertainment that we have today, the movies that we have today, the music that we have today, you see, the acid rock music that we have today, and all those kind of things, they're all there because we do not follow the law of God, the teachings of God, and because we don't have a group of people, in terms of Levites, who make sure that everything is done in accordance with the will of God. You see, that's how far we are away from God, and so we do our own thing. Obviously, the time will come when all that is going to change. Again, the Levites will be teaching all the people of Israel, and they will get to the point where, as it says, there will be no need anymore to tell people, know the Lord. You know what His mind is on music and entertainment and this and that and the other thing. All shall know Him from the greatest to the least. That's the kind of knowledge that we're talking about here. All shall know the law of God in every aspect of life. They shall know what His mind is about culture and arts and music and health and justice and agriculture and real estate and banking and construction and so forth and so forth. And so in essence, the Levitical priesthood was chosen to teach Israel all these aspects of life to make them a holy people. People who abuse the land are not a holy people. You see, people who abuse their bodies and eat junk food are not holy people. You see, they are defiled people. And the job of the priesthood and the Levites was to teach all Israel everything that pertains to life. Everything that would make them holy. You see? And so they were extremely highly educated people. And their information came not from somebody, you know, a guru, a wise man. It came directly from God. That's the kind of people they were. And that's why later on Moses would tell them, you know, the whole world is going to see, you know, the laws and commandments that you have and realize, oh, what a wise nation this is. You see? And we are not that kind of people, unfortunately, today. A lot of the information that we disseminate around the world is an information of iniquity, of destruction, of pollution. And the consequences are not good. So, you know, we have to realize that what the Levitical priesthood were all about. So these are people that are between 20 and 50 that serve in the tabernacle the first 10 years, sort of trainees. And they were counted here from 1 month and up. And obviously children were not counted. Women were not counted, you see. And so 22,000 is just the males that were counted in a certain category of life. Exactly how many there were, nobody ever knew. And in verse 41, we read what God is saying, actually in verse 40. And the Lord said unto Moses, number all the firstborn males of the children of Israel from a month old and upward, and take the number of their names, and you shall take the Levites for me, even the Lord. You see, they're the ministry. And you cannot just vote yourself into the ministry. You cannot ordain yourself into the ministry. And Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He has not changed. Now, everybody in Israel shall be knowledgeable and be able to teach his family. That's one thing. But in certain functions, God says, unless you have been chosen and ordained to that, obviously, this is not what you should be doing. And unfortunately, some people, not having the knowledge of the law, not having an understanding and appreciation for it, not comprehending it properly, they think, well, each does that which is right in his own sight. And that makes us unholy in that way. And a lot of people don't realize that, unfortunately. But when you study the law of God, you begin to appreciate, you begin to comprehend and understand that this is serious business. Just like we could not enter into the tabernacle, and God says, if you do, you will be put to death. It's the same thing also for positions and offices that God has not called us to perform. You see, if we become presumptuous and want to do it on our own, and who cares about anybody, well, we're going to end up before the judgment seat and have to give an account for it. And so this is what Moses is told to do. Count all these people by name. And there he said, God, they belong to me. They are mine. Others are not. These are. That means about this position of the Levitical priesthood. And he said that the Levites are for me, even the Lord, instead of all the firstborn among the children of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of all the firstlings among the cattle of the children of Israel. So since every firstborn was sanctified by God to become his, you see, therefore, instead of taking every firstborn from every family, which is going to be a problem for the people, as it became a problem later on for the Catholic Church, where they followed this example in the wrong way, not the way God told them. You know, they were doing their own thing. God didn't say, enough from every family, take the firstborn. But that's what they used to do. Dedicate the firstborn, you know, to the priesthood, you know, to the church. And the second one went to the army to do battle, you see. So they were left with a family that did not have the best, you know, the cream of the crop, so to speak, of the family there. And so oftentimes those who went to war, they got killed. Those who went to the church did not marry, you see. And that affects very much biologically and you know, the quality of the family. And so when you do it also for animals, it's going to have the same problem. And so God said, you know, that you dedicate the firstborn, and you are able to redeem it, because now the Levi takes his place, and the Levi will be the one to fulfill that responsibility. As for the animals, the firstborn had to be given to God to be offered, but God made it possible for them to redeem it if they wanted to. And all the offerings that they gave to the Levites became instead of the firstborn that they had to give. So, you know, they had a way of making an exchange there. Just like, you know, making an exchange in terms of the firstborn, they could make an exchange also in terms of the animals. And that's the way God made it, and that's the way God instructed them to do it, and that's the way they did it. You see? And as long as people followed the orders of God and the commandments of God and the teachings of God, they were holy people, and they were not, they were unholy people. And they had to bear the consequences. Verse 42, and Moses numbered as the Lord commanded him. And mind you, how God constantly repeats that and makes Moses write it so all of us can comprehend it, you know, get it through our skull head. You know, the thick skull, so to speak, as some people say, or thick head. We do not do things our own way. If we are to be like God, if we are to be like Him, and holy like Him, and righteous like Him, we're going to have to study His law so we would know what is the will of God. A lot of people say, now, what is the will of God for me? And never bother to study the law. That will tell them what is the will of God. And so they work in blindness and ignorance, or they invent their own concepts of what the will of God is. Or they look into certain statements, you know, where they give you instructions in terms of general concepts, like in Micah, you know, what is the will of God, you know, but that you walk humbly before God, that, you know, you fear Him, tremble at His word, you know, do justice. Okay, that's a general statement. But how? You see, only when you read the law in detail, you find out how. So you have to know everything, and God wants us to be wise, grow in grace and knowledge and understanding. And much of that, when that statement was made, was based on the study of the law of God, of the Torah of God. You see, the man who made that statement is a Jew, raised on the law and the prophets. And so when he talks, he knows what he's talking about, and the Jews know what he's talking about. But non-Jews, non-Israelites, who have not been raised on the law, you see, they don't know what he's talking about. They think that they do. So when he says, grow in grace and knowledge and understanding, oh, the Lord Jesus Christ, and this is Jesus Christ speaking, you'd never know what he's talking about. Though you may think that you do. Unless you begin reading Genesis 1:1, then 1:2, and 1:3, and so forth, from beginning until the end of the book. From, you know, Genesis 1:1 to Revelation, the last verse. And so, you know, we have to comprehend it. And for 2,000 years, the so-called, you know, Christian religion or Christianity, traditional Christianity, has been taught, forget about the law of God. And in essence, forget about the prophets. The Psalms is okay. The Psalms was used by many for inspiration, not necessarily for following the instructions that are in it. They constantly talk about the law of God, the commandments of God. You see, they couldn't care less much about that. It's just, for the aspects that, give you a little inspiration there, make you feel good. Well, these people obviously would never be able to be holy, and they're not God's people. You cannot be God's people and be a rebellious people and despise His law, His nature, His character, all of His instructions, you see. You cannot grow in grace and knowledge and understanding unless you follow all these instructions and apply to yourself what is applicable at the moment. Sometimes circumstances, would affect that. And people don't do it. And that's very unfortunate. But the day will come, as God said, where I'm going to make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. The people that despise my law and commandments have been taught by false prophets. It's done away with. He said, I'm going to write it in their hearts. You see? It's not going to be in a book anymore, but it's going to be in their heart. Because they're going to be taught it day and night, intensively, until they know it by heart. And walk in it, and abide in it, and not have contempt for it. And, in essence, we're trying to do a little bit of that here. Which is the responsibility of every single one of us. To grow in grace and knowledge and understanding. And that's what Peter is talking about. Peter, a minister to the circumcision, writing to the circumcision, to the children of Israel, all the tribes of Israel that he dealt with. And that's what he's writing to. And he certainly is not going to tell them, forget all about the law. And so, that's what God told Moses, and that's what Moses did. And verse 42, and Moses numbered, as the Lord commanded him, all the firstborn among the children of Israel, and all the firstborn males, according to the number of the names from a month old and upward of those that were numbered of them, were 22,213. So, talking about 22 and 200. Well, it's quite a number there, of the firstborn. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, verse 45, take the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the children of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of their cattle, and the Levites shall be mine, even the Lord's. So again, he repeats that. And that makes it very plain. And so later on, when the apostles are ordaining, they understand that they have been raised on the law from a child, as Paul would say to Timothy, from a child you have known the Holy Scriptures, that's what he's talking about here, what we are reading, which were able to make you wise unto salvation. That was the intent of those Holy Scriptures, by faith, through Jesus Christ, the God of Israel, the one who gave them all these instructions. And you can never really comprehend this statement unless you've been taught the law of God and you know it, you see. You really do not understand what the Apostle Paul was talking about. A lot of people, because they despise the law of God, they can read those things. Just like, there are several languages we can read, but we don't know what it means. We can just read it. Or first grader, if he goes to a university, just sits in class, he hears words, but doesn't know what he's hearing. You see, he does not really understand what they're talking about, even though he can hear the words. And that's unfortunately what happens to many when they go directly to the New Testament, and they have no background, no context, no understanding of what the apostles are talking about. And yet, the whole religion is based on ignorance and blindness and assumptions. You see, that they know what they're reading, and they don't. And how many of us, unfortunately, are in this category when we do not know the law of God? You see, the writings of the disciples and of Jesus Christ came to magnify the law. If you don't know the law, you don't know what they're magnifying. You don't comprehend what they're magnifying. It's as simple as that. And so this is what God says. These people are mine, even the Lord's. And then in verse 46 we read, and it is for the redemption of the 213 of the firstborn of the children of Israel. So he literally numbered every firstborn in all the families of Israel that are over and above the number of the Levites. You shall take 5 shekels apiece by the pole after the shekel of the sanctuary. Shall you take them? The shekel is 20 gerahs. So I take 5 shekels, from that came the shillings in England, you see, and the pennies. And to this very day, there is a ceremony that is called Pidyon HaBen, that is the redemption of the son, the firstborn in Israel. And there is a Levite there, a rabbi in today's, you know, reality. Generally, in every synagogue, there are those who are still known as priests and Levites, and so they officiate in this ceremony also. And literally, you know, there is a coin there that is passed on from the parents to the priest or the Levite. Generally, it's a priest, you see, because his name is priest, so he still knows that he's a priest, Kohen, or Kahana, or Katz, you know, they have different variations nowadays. And so this ceremony, this law, is not done away with. It's still being practiced to this very day, but a lot of people just don't think about it anymore. Of course, today we don't have a Levitical priesthood, so you might say in one sense there is a modification there. But on the other hand, you know, this law, again, in spite of that, is still being kept in the Jewish community, that is, in the Orthodox Jewish community. When the boy is a month old, that's when they do it. Because, you see, God says, you know, you count them only from a month old. In other words, when they reach the age of 1 month, that's when they were counted, that's when they were redeemed. You see, that's when the redemption happens. And so this is what God is saying here. And as for the redemption of the 200, you see, that literally had to redeem them, he said, that's how you're going to do it. You give 5 shekels to the priest, and then you get back your son, your firstborn. And so he says, you shall take the 5 shekels apiece by the pole after the shekel of the sanctuary, and that shekel was 20 gerahs, and you shall give the money wherewith they that remain over of them are redeemed unto Aaron and to his sons. And Moses took the redemption money from them that were over and above them that were redeemed by the Levites. From the firstborn of the children of Israel took he the money, 1,365 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary. And Moses gave the redemption money unto Aaron and to his sons according to the word of the Lord, as the Lord commanded Moses. So that was the first census that was done there for the firstborn. But then, on a yearly basis, well, actually, whenever it happens, when a firstborn is born, that ceremony was to be reenacted. And so it is to this very day, as I mentioned, in the Orthodox Jewish community. And that's, in essence, a part of what Jesus Christ said. You know, heaven and earth shall pass, but not one jot or one tittle shall pass from the law. So certain things that, you know, still can be done. And even though in the synagogue today, you don't really have a functioning ministry of the priests and the Levites like it was in the temple, but you have, or at least in part, you know, the priests in the synagogue to this very day still do certain things that they can. One is, they're the first to read the portion of the law, of the Torah, you see. In every synagogue where you go to, the first person that reads is a priest. Some synagogues you might go to, and you would find somebody walking around and asking you, are you a priest? And if you are, then you are to rise up and read the law. And after that comes the Levi, and after that the men of Israel. You see? So that part they still do, and they are the ones at a certain part of the service where they stand before the ark of all the scrolls, and they bless Israel according to the law, you see, as God commanded the priest to do that. So that's still being kept to this very day. And, you know, whatever things the priests can do, they still do today, without the sanctuary. So Christ made it very plain, you know, that heaven and earth shall pass, but not one jot or one tittle shall pass from the law. So the things that we can still do, we do. And the things that are in limbo, obviously we cannot do. But when the temple is restored, all those functions will be fully restored there. And though they may be suspended, they are not done away. And that's what Christ exactly was saying. They are not done away, even though they may be suspended, you see. And until the whole plan of God is fulfilled and all, you know, human beings become spirit beings, this would be applicable. In chapter 4 we read, and the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, take the sum of the sons of Kohath from among the sons of Levi, by their families, by their fathers' houses, from 30 year old and upward, even until 50 year old, all that enter upon the service to do work in the tent of meeting. And this is what the terminology of the work, avodah, in Hebrew, You see, and avodah means work, and eved means a worker, and also slave. You know, the word slave in Hebrew means eved. In other words, a worker. And that's what it means. And Israelites were, you know, could have workers, you know, slaves, workers, that is, but not slaves in the sense of the nations of all around them. You see, that's why the Israeli slave or worker could live after 7 years. You see, he was not a property forever, because God says, you are my property, you are my slaves, my workers. And so the people of God were called now the slaves of God, in other words, the servants of God. And that's what you see the apostles constantly repeating that statement. Paul, a slave of God, a bond servant of God. You see, that's the terminology. Oved. That's the word that he used, you know, when he writes to them. And obviously, if he writes in Greek, he uses the Greek word for it. So this is basically what it means. And when you read about Moses being the servant of God, that's what it means. The worker of God. And from that comes the word, the work. You see? And in the temple, instructions, rituals, ceremonies that the priests were doing was also called the work. You see? And from that came this concept, the work. A lot of people are not aware of that. But they were to enter into that work, into the work, from 20, that is from 20 to 30, that was a period of training, but the official induction to that office was from 30 to 50. In other words, period of 20 years. A lot of it had to do with hard labor, and you know, all kind of things like that, and needed maturity and understanding and comprehension and, you see, and respect, you know, so forth. But by age 50, God says no more. Now go take it easy, do other things, you know, be a teacher, a judge, a policeman, you know, all kind of things like that, and give instructions. And so that's the way basically it was. And as long as the temple was in existence, that's the way it functioned. At age 50, you had to retire, you see. You could not go to the temple anymore to do the service there, because that was only for people between 30 and 50. Verse 4, and we read, you know, here it called, well, we read here, until 50 years old, all that enter upon the service, you know, the service means the work, avodah. Verse 4, this is the service of the sons of Kohath in the tent of meeting, about the most holy things. So the family of Kohath had that responsibility, you might say, you know, the highest level of work that they did was that family in particular, Kohath. Verse 5, when the camp sets forward, Aaron shall go in, and his sons, and they shall take down the veil of the screen, you know, from the Holy of Holies, and cover the Ark of the Testimony with it, and this is the only family that could do it. And so they continued to do it until the destruction of the temple. And when the new temple is going to be rebuilt in the days of the Messiah, or the one prior to that, the temporary one, before the coming of Christ, again, that family, members of that family, and basically will end up doing the same thing. How are they going to find out exactly who is from that particular family of Kohath? I don't know. But if God is involved in it, and the two witnesses are going to be there, I don't think it's going to be a problem to find out who is who. Verse 6, they shall put thereon a covering of silk skin, and shall spread over it a cloth all of blue, and shall set the staves thereof, and upon the table shall bread, they shall spread a cloth of blue, and put thereon the dishes, and the pans, and the bowls, and the jars wherewith to pour out, and the continual bread shall remain thereon. Notice the detailed instruction. Everything that you did in the temple, if it did not come from the mouth of God, you didn't do it. Plain. Very simple. Period. You see? And that's how they followed. That's how they were sanctified. And if any one of them, you know, was a smart aleck and thought he was going to do his own thing, well, God let them know what he thought about it. He gave them already an example in the beginning. The two sons of Aaron. You don't play games with me. You see? That's how we learned to fear God. We don't play games with Him. If He doesn't choose to deal with us now, He will when the time comes. It's just a matter of time. And in His time, just a few seconds. You see, so we should develop this attitude. We should not play games with the law of God and the teachings of God and the instructions of God. Just follow it in detail. This is what it's called, basically, the simplicity in Christ. He tells you to do it, you do it. Very simple. You don't have to be a spiritual giant to do that. And unfortunately, when people do not study the law day and night, all the time, not just some, then obviously we're not able to do the will of God. We do not know His will. You see? And we're not able to be holy. You know, we have a lot of spots and blemishes in us. And so God says, that's the way you do it. That's the way they did it. There was no other way. There's no improvement. There is no new way. There is no, well, you know, we're now smarter and more intelligent. We know better. He just did it exactly as God said. You see? And basically, you know, the motto was very plain. You know, just like some people like to use it humorously today. You do what I say, nobody gets hurt. Verse 8, and they shall spread upon them a cloth of scarlet, and cover the same with a covering of silk skin, and shall set the stays thereof. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.